Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half full editor. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, David Weinchurch. How are you, Dave?
Howdy, Noah. I just got back from Nashville, so, you know, I'm pretending I'm a cowboy.
I look out for the yawls.
Yeah, there'll be some yawls.
I was wondering about the cowboy boots, but
I got spurs.
I was just going to let them slide, whatever.
They jingle jangle.
Exactly.
And jingle.
Exactly. Today, we're talking about a favorite topic of ours, rum. You know, a common thread among cocktails and spirits folks, but this kind of idea that rum is the next big category.
Oh, they've been pushing that for years.
Right.
Rum makers and some spirits geeks is like,
sure.
It's always, well, okay, whiskey now, then rum. For a while it was like, well, cachaça, then rum.
Right, exactly.
Everything was going to be the gateway for rum.
Well, and I think it's sort of like the life cycle of a, you know, whiskey expert or somebody obsessed with whiskey is that, you know, they drink whatever it is, Scotch or American whiskey. And then at a certain point, somebody is like, here's a glass of this stuff. And they're like, ooh, this is amazing. What is like aged rum? And they're like, aged rum is the next thing. You know, it's this
exactly
calming jump from whiskey to dark rum. And then, you know, they're on Twitter and Facebook and whatever platform exists screaming about how rum is amazing. And the next thing, it's like, Yeah. We've been drinking. We know.
Yeah.
Not disagreeing
like
with you. We love rum.
Yeah.
It's been around. A lot of people already drink rum. The potential is definitely there for even more people to drink rum and like kind of climb out of, you know, for a while, like rum was sort of in this, I don't know, its own kind of weird category.
I mean, up until the 90s and up until the cocktail revolution, it was just almost lowest common denominator stuff.
Well, it's hard to find rum without Coke, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's true.
To say, oh, I'll have a rum and like the bartender would say, and Coke, you know, they're already reaching for the gun as they reach for the bottle.
Or the, you know, the pina colada blender.
Exactly.
You know.
Again, nothing wrong with those types of drinks. And, you know, I've certainly had my share of pina coladas. And then I think next up was sort of the mojito craze.
That was you in the ad, wasn't it?
That was me. And then the mojito craze, you know, that I think kind of opened up a lot of doors and brought rum into a lot of bars that traditionally would have served rum and onto a lot of menus, you know, the bar inside of Grand Central, the sort of secret Campbell apartment, that was a – one of the big New York bars that opened around 2001 or so, too. And I remember, you know, one of their big drinks, it was a mojito and a pint glass. God knows how much rum they went through for.
Probably an ounce and a half for each one of those.
All right, fair enough. But they sold a lot of ounces.
They sold a lot of, they did.
You know, as a result, we saw a lot of companies start high-end rum brands. Some of them are still with us. A lot of them, you know, have gone to the graveyard of, you know, in the sky of, you know, deceased.
Well, I think they all kind of had a structural problem. Is nobody, you know, to kind of pull things up into the category of a desirable, hotly pursued spirit, you need something collectible. You need something for the geeks to geek out about.
Yeah.
And I think all of those brands, the problem was nobody knew what was in the bottle.
Yeah.
You know, it was all, they were all blends.
Yeah.
They were all this and that. And it was...
Well, it just wasn't treated as like a real luxury item.
Yeah,
it
exactly.
It was more of like a, almost like a... like a soda or, you know.
Yeah, it was a branding exercise.
Right. It wasn't, you know, it was more, we're going to consume this now in the next, you know, few days in this blender drink or mixed with a lot of juice or some other mixer. But the idea of kind of like the sipping rum, fairly new phenomenon.
And even the sipping rums themselves were kind of hard to tell what was a good one, you know.
Right.
So many of them were heavily treated.
Yeah, it's true. I think the tide has finally started to shift for good and for bad.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll get into both. The good news is you're right. You could stock a whole bar with rums from all over the world. You know, excellent rums from America, and like Privateer.
What's changed now is they've all got provenance.
Yes.
And that's the difference, I think, is now people are saying, as they did with whiskey,
yeah.
We want to know the producer. We want to know how this was made. You can't just give us some blend and say, it's our secret blend that we've been doing for 40 years.
Everybody has to have their own flavor profile. You know, we saw this with Scotch where back in the day when all the single malt went into blends,
mm-hmm.
differentiating yourself from the guy next door wasn't really that important for the most part, right? They wanted, in fact, it was probably...
people bought on price. People
In fact, the blenders probably didn't want that. They wanted... No. You know, bulk from one area to taste like a certain thing, bulk yeah. from another area to taste like that. But once the blenders stopped buying single malt and the single malt people actually had to start selling it as a bottle distinct product, differentiating one brand from the next became the whole business.
Well, if you know, I mean, going back to Scotch, you know when the Scotch market matured out of like blend competition when you stop seeing funny looking bottles.
Right.
Because while it was all kind of identical blends competing.
Didn't matter.
Well, funny looking bottle is like, right. That's your unique selling proposition.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And with rums, we're starting to see the move away from
yeah.
funny, like
the
we have
novelty.
Our unique bottle.
Right.
You know, you have only this bottle. It's
right.
like, yeah, we put it in a regular wine bottle like everyone else. You know, not, because we're competing on what's in the bottle, not.
Yeah.
The marketing, not the branding.
We're seeing more age statements, more information on the labels. Rum can be made anywhere, right?
Yeah.
It's not like
and
champagne or scotch.
Yeah.
It can be made from basically any base that's like, you know, sugar, right?
I just bought a fabulous sugarcane juice rum made in Okinawa, and it's really good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing it, Dave. Not like I didn't want to try that, but that's okay. It's
you'll
fine.
You'll have to come
next
over.
Next time. Basically, rum can be made of any kind of sugar base. Beyond that, there are no rules.
Well, there are no global rules.
Right.
There are lots of little rules. We'll talk about that a little
yeah.
too, I think. You know, every country that makes it has their own rules.
Right.
Now they're trying. There's a huge argument that maybe we can get into in a bit in the parts of the Caribbean about trying to get a unique Caribbean
right.
standard, but that's pretty restrictive.
And I think it's both freeing traditionally that there's no rules.
Yeah.
So like you get a lot of innovation, you get a lot of different styles, you know, traditionally like the rum agricole from Martinique tastes nothing like, you know, almost bigger flavor. It's not that traditional Jamaican,
yeah,
you know, pot still.
No,
it's not
like a molassesy rum.
No, it's yeah. very, you know, unctuous and kind of funky. And then, you know, you have rums from Jamaica that are funky in a whole other way.
Well,
you know?
let's talk about those a little bit, because that, I think, is the most interesting thing that's emerging. Up until recently, there was no sort of single malt scotch
right.
equivalent in the
right.
rum world that had been identified.
People were trying to create that.
Yeah.
Right? Like people
yeah.
were marketing it.
They were
it.
Trying to create their blend as that.
Right. But they didn't actually have the rum to do that.
Exactly. You're starting to see a return in Jamaica to pure pot still rum.
Right.
Up until 1950, Jamaica only used pot stills for their rum. They specialized in making a heavy, rich
right.
flavored, funky rum that was more expensive to make than any other rum. They had all these different types from all these different flavor profiles from all the different rum plantations,
yeah.
you know, all the different rum estates there, the sugar estates. And these were called marks. And eventually they got consolidated so one distillery would make equivalents to the marks of many different rum estates. But nonetheless, you had these like pot still, really honest product, you know. I mean, not to say a column still rum is dishonest, but this stuff was pretty close to the ground.
But there's nothing to hide. I mean,
yeah.
we're using pot
yeah.
still. I
mean, yeah, it's a pot still, and it was made from molasses and usually dunder, which is the leftover from a previous run like Sour Mash Whiskey
sure.
does. And it was a complicated stuff.
I mean, it's a very, very similar story to what happened in Ireland, right? Where
yeah.
you have hundreds of distilleries, you know, shrink down to one or two main
exactly.
distilleries. Bushmills in the north is making single malt. But down in the south, you had Middleton making all these different blends. And recently, they've been producing a whole Redbreast and, you know, the Green Spot and Yellow Spot.
Yeah, all these different styles
all
of
the
pot
still stuff. And you see the same kind of connoisseurship and appreciation
exactly.
for pot still Irish rum.
Irish whiskey.
Irish whiskey.
Irish rum's coming.
Irish rum's coming. But Irish whiskey. But Irish whiskey is very similar to sort of the Jamaican rum story.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, absolutely.
If we extrapolate out, you know, we'll see a similar uptick for the Jamaican pot still.
And there are like four or five different distilleries in Jamaica making pot still rum. None of them were marketing under their own name. Because that was how the Jamaican rum industry grew up.
Right.
It grew up selling this stuff abroad where it would get blended and mixed, et cetera. Sure. But now the geeks have proved that there's a market for single estate rum or single distillery rum, pot still rum from Jamaica. Now you're seeing a number of brands. There are all these new brands. Rum Fire has three different ones from one distillery. Hampton, one of the oldest distilleries, has launched here in America with some absolutely spectacular pot still rums just from their distillery. Yeah. You see Long Pond Distillery's got a number under the Plantation mark. Somebody can go into a liquor store and say, I like the Hampton style, the Worthy Park style. Right. Maybe the Long Pond style isn't for me. And they can find rums marked like that. That's the beginning of connoisseurship.
So, and also maybe the beginning of the end. Have we crossed into the
we crossed into the
cons list? It sounds that was right there at the precipice of good and bad that comes together.
Exactly what happened to bourbon. You know, it's like suddenly all the interesting small bottlings are gone. Yeah.
Prices go up, right? Yep. All the bargains. You know, and people used to say that American whiskey was undervalued compared to Scotch, and then rum definitely undervalued to, you know, American whiskey. I did a story a couple of months ago about, you know, the undervalued spirits that you could buy. The Haitian Bourbon Court is on there. I mean, it's like an 8-year-old rum, and $25 or whatever it is. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, but you know, I had flashbacks of writing about all these different American whiskeys.
Yeah, we're cutting our own throats with this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's
I'm a rum drinker, so this is costing me.
If you have the space and the inclination and the disposable income, I would say start buying cases of some of this.
No, don't
rum.
Do that. Don't do that.
No, if you like. One
this
or two of these.
It's going to end up in your basement forever, and then I won't get any. Well, and I'm going to be really unhappy.
Well, that's all right.
And I'm going to take it out on you, Noah.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Well, if you don't invite Dave over, then buy a case of your favorite rum because it's surely going to go up. I mean, the next couple of years. Or it's going to disappear.
It is.
The age statements are going to disappear.
But we're going to also, I think, see maybe some more distilleries opening in Jamaica.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there are lots of there's lots of untapped potential there. There, especially in the north of the island, which is the heartland of rum making in the past.
Yeah.
I hope it actually manages to drive something of a renaissance in this style of rum.
And we've seen that in Kentucky too, right? In Tennessee and around America, you know, where this connoisseurship and renaissance has led to new distilleries and more investment, which is all wonderful things, but it's also fueled the type of, you know, snobbery that usually associated with wine or, you know, fancy French watches or, you know, vintage Ferraris. These things are almost desired as an object, right? Mm-hmm. To be gazed at,
exactly,
and
so you can brag that you've got cases stacked in your cellar.
Right, sure. I mean, if you're going to buy the rum, I would hope that you drink it.
Yeah, drink it. I know some bourbon people who have like cases and cases of rare bourbon stacked up in their cellar for no reason whatsoever,
other than
to say that they have it. They're never going to drink it.
I was down in Kentucky years ago doing a book signing for my book, The Art of American Whiskey, and a guy bought a copy, and then we started talking, and he showed me photos of his collection. I mean, I don't, it looked like, you know, like a small New York City apartment. It was just floor to ceiling shelves of the rarest bourbons. And it was one of the saddest photos I've ever seen because
it's a prison for those bottles.
Right. I mean, nobody's ever going to drink those.
No.
In 30 years, are we going to value those bottles? Is it going to be like Beanie Baby craze where, you know, suddenly the market crashes?
I think it is. You know, so the market can drop out of anything, any collectible.
It's only, you know, it's only worth what somebody will pay you for.
Exactly.
It,
and if you're hoarding it for those reasons, I just feel sorry for you.
I see shades of that now in the nascent rum community where this new one and some of the new brands and the pricing and the marketing, and it's sort of tapping into that vein.
At the same time, it does build pressure on the producers to make more.
Absolutely.
And to open up previously closed lines of supply or to find things new to the market, such as the Clarins from Haiti, which are very interesting, very funky agricole type rums that we haven't had here before, except for the occasional bottle you'd buy way out in Brooklyn.
Yeah,
like the one I bought from the Fathead Distilling Company.
Okay.
And that stuff would absolutely kill you.
Right.
It was unbearable. But that was bad Clarin.
Right.
There's good Clarin, it turns out, too.
And I think we're also seeing, you know, similar innovation in terms of how people are drinking it, right?
I mean,
you know, it's not just the rum and Coke anymore. It's, you know, old fashions with rum. We see all types of...
Oh, there's the, well, the tiki...
For sure.
The tiki, I won't call it a trend. It's kind of a revival, and it's moved into being a very happy little subculture that keeps bubbling along.
Whereas once it was its own culture and kind of trend, tiki has now just sort of become part of the overall craft cocktail renaissance.
It's like a door you open up in your speakeasy, and there's a tiki bar there.
Right.
And you're like, oh, that's fun.
Now, like, you have to have, like, a tiki drink.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of bar you are.
Yeah.
You're a mezcal bar, it doesn't matter. You have to have a tiki drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're a scotch bar, you still have a tiki drink.
And every city has to have a couple tiki bars.
Exactly.
You know?
So,
It's never going to break out and be the dominant trend again.
No.
It's not going to be the 1950s, I think. But you know, but it does bring a lot of rum out there. And
I don't know what it is about rum, but the rum faithful seem to be the most, how do I put it politely, cranky online, right? Like, like I don't see the same types of passion, we'll call it passion, and fights, you know, among other, at least not anymore, not really, you know, between American whiskey people. Or
well, in American
people.
Whiskey, you could fight bourbon or rye, but, you know, the rye people are so badly outnumbered, even still, that, you know.
There is a brand trying to start that fight again, but it's, I'm not sure anybody really cares.
No, but I don't think anybody really cares. They like both.
Right. And most of the brands make both. But the rum brands definitely seem the most pugnacious recently.
Well, there's a lot of fighting about what you can call rum and what you know.
Right.
And there are a lot of people who are agitating very strongly, usually for things that their definition of rum happens to coincide very strongly with the kind of rum they make.
Right.
So I kind of worry about that. You know,
it's the old "I know rum when I see it" kind of thing.
And when I see it, it's the rum that I make.
Right, exactly.
You know? And that stuff you're making, that's not rum.
Yeah, which I mean, I think it's funny to me because for so long, there are no rules. I mean, there's technically no rules.
Yeah.
So, you know, for us to sit around very seriously fighting about the rules to making rum, it seems particularly ridiculous given that, you know, what are we fighting about?
The thing I would like to see is a simple set of rules saying where the rum was distilled, what kind of still was used, what's been added to it, and how it's been aged.
Right.
You know, that's it.
Like right on the label.
Yeah, and for everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
But I would like that for all spirits.
All spirits, exactly. Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what people forget. Like, you know, like this is, it's not a lot of the issues that they're, you know, very upset about or passionate.
Yeah.
These are issues that affect most spirit categories.
I mean, and most spirits have solved that.
Right.
You know, Mezcal, they tell you all that stuff pretty much.
For the most part.
For the most part. Yeah. American whiskey, for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, Scotch whiskey, for the most part.
I mean, it's a fairly simple fix here. I mean, I think...
Yeah, it is.
I don't...
It's just disclosure. The
problem is that, again, rum can be made literally...
Oh, I know.
So, like...
So, you need a country like the United States to drop the hammer because it's such a big market. And say, we want disclosure of what's in the bottle.
Or some of the big brands to say, yeah, take this first step and say, look,
yeah,
we're going to disclose all the stuff on our label.
Yeah.
Everybody would follow suit because it's like, look, we got to keep up with them.
Yeah, yeah,
if they're,
yeah,
doing it,
yeah,
we need to do it.
Yeah, so, if they say, you know, we're a column distilled molasses rum that's, right, been aged.
And some of them do. I mean, maybe not, yeah, yeah, all that info, but,
oh yeah,
I mean, I think the additives are the sticking point, yeah, for a lot of.
If you said, you know, we used 3% aged sugar, according to traditional rum, right, blending methods, well, okay, you know, then you know.
Right.
And if you said, but if you had to disclose the percentage, that would put the people who had 12% in, right, into like a serious problem. If it's like 2 to 1 to 3%, yeah, or something, then okay. The problem is right now you have people like howling a lot, and one gets the impression that these things are sweetened to the point of being liqueurs, right, which they're not.
Right. There are spirits like that, exceptions in all categories.
Of course, I mean,
there are exceptions in, you know, the whiskey category. There are exceptions, yeah, 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 in, you know, the scotch category. Yeah. I mean, they may be called liqueurs, but there,
right,
are.
Right. But I mean, I would just like to see disclosure.
The most wonderful thing about the rum category is the diversity of rums and,
oh,
the,
yeah,
range,
oh,
and,
yeah,
the fact that it's in this day and age where basically you go anywhere in the world and it's the same store selling the, oh, same stuff, no matter where you go. It's nice to actually go to a country and find that they have their own unique rum style.
Well, they're starting to bring in rums from countries that have never exported before,
right,
because there's a market now.
Exactly.
I've got some Mexican rums, which,
right,
are from South Mexico,
right, it's amazing,
that are just dynamite.
Yeah.
You know, there's one that's made from half molasses and half sugarcane,
yeah,
juice.
I think we just wrote about it. Will Thompson,
yeah,
a bartender in Miami. That was his obsession of the week that we wrote about.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, I mean,
yeah,
you're right.
All those things are, they're so good, you know,
yeah,
and it's a beautiful thing to see.
And it seems so rare in this day and age that you're able to find something new in the world of spirits,
yeah,
and cocktails. You know, like so many of the lost unicorns have been found, right,
right,
and brought back.
Absolutely.
So that this is actually something that's out there that a lot of us haven't tasted, but we still want it, or that we can bring back from our travels.
And so, you know, there's still more stuff. I mean, it's not a sugarcane rum, but it's, there's a, I put something up on my Twitter account at David Wandrich and about how I'd like to see maple rum come back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I saw that.
And maple rum is something they used to make in New England and Southern Canada,
yeah,
in the 19th century. And you can call it a rum, I think, because it's made from sap.
Exactly.
Which is what rum is made,
yeah,
from. And they also used to make rum from corn stalks, which is another grass, you know, like sugar cane.
And we saw when we were up at Whistlepig last year,
yeah,
last fall,
we tried
Vermont.
It.
We tried their... Their
and
maple
it was tasty
syrup.
As
it
hell.
It was very, very good.
And, you know, that's something that is worth exploring. I know a couple of small distilleries have tried it, and,
yeah,
but there's been no, not enough marketing behind it to sustain it.
And talk about a product that really represents where it's from. I
exactly.
Mean, I hate to use the word, but terroir, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I,
oh,
you know,
the terroir of northern of New England, and,
right? I mean,
you know, upstate New York,
right? I mean,
and,
if we're going to go all snobby
Canada,
here on rum,
I know,
I start throwing around the world the,
yeah,
word terroir, but that is like actual, you know, reflective of,
yeah,
New England, and,
yeah,
and is something that they've been doing for probably hundreds of years,
since, exactly.
You
so.
Know, arguably before America was America, yeah, we've been making a rum,
yeah,
you know, from maple syrup.
Yeah, and
so.
They've been doing. You know, they've done it from sorghum stalks. They've,
right,
done it from corn stalks. And those are all, they're not sugarcane rums, but I don't know what else to call them because they're,
right,
made from the sap, you know, rather than a fruit or a grain.
Right.
So, and that's what rum's made from. So I think you could even theoretically further expand the playing,
yeah,
field here. Just huge category of stuff.
I think the box that we traditionally talk about rum is fairly small. It's
it
usually
is.
The Caribbean. And in our earlier episode,
yeah,
about really the prehistory of rum,
yeah,
I mean, as you found out from your expert research, rum goes back way farther.
Oh, yeah.
All the way to like Southeast Asia. And the roots of rum are probably way more diverse.
Yeah,
so all these conversations
old.
About this is how rum was made.
Yeah.
Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
Like this year, last year in the 1400s,
yeah. Yeah.
1500 years ago, was it really made that,
yeah,
way?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I don't think you can speak for that, you know, so.
So who knows? I mean,
knows?
It's certainly not something that we're going to solve today.
No.
But I look forward to having some of your rare and fine rums the next time I come to your house.
I will break
them. Don't hide them this time.
I will not hide them this time.
Looking forward to another episode of Life Behind Bars. Cheers.
Cheers.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.